21. Keeping both lightsabers crossed in front of him, Reef began backing toward the transport pod. With his shoulder, he was able to nudge Dez along, but not quickly. Reef would have strongly preferred to move quickly because the Drengir continued to close in around them. However, his obvious plan of escape seemed not to concern them, which meant there was some serious flaw Reef hadn't thought through yet. "If it's that big a problem, I'll find out about it soon enough," he told himself. He wanted to get them talking, both to learn what he could and so they'd finally stop referring to him as meat. "So," he said, "are the Drengir from this world and some of you traveled to the station? Or did you settle this planet by leaving the station on one of the hyperspace pods?" To Reef, the pods looked like an automated relay, but he wanted the Drengir to confirm that. What he said interested them, he could tell, but they still didn't acknowledge him. One of them said,
"Others of our kind remain on the station. It has seen them."
The Drengir leader hissed, which seemed to be their version of a thoughtful sound.
"Then they were not killed. Only dormant. If they are dormant, they can be freed. Can we do it without falling dormant ourselves?"
asked another Drengir.
"Why should we risk ourselves for the weak?"
In response, the Drengir leader lashed out with his thorn whip, forcing the speaker to crouch submissively.
"We do not risk ourselves for the weak. We risk ourselves to learn if we can again use the pods. If so, we can resume our hunt. At last, we will find fresh meat."
"Okay, so that's just one mention of meat too many, and we're going to go now," Reef said, nudging the tottering Dez more strongly toward the first pod.
"We will be able to hunt,"
a Drengir pointed a moldy green finger at Dez.
"This one has told us that nothing holds us back any longer."
When did Dez start giving Drengir pep talks?
But by then, Reef understood that Dez wasn't himself and hadn't been since almost the moment of his transport. He'd obviously sustained a serious head injury, but that had been only the start of his problems. The Force alone knew what Dez might have been drugged with or interrogated about. He faced the Drengir evenly as he kept edging Dez farther and farther back. They'd almost reached the launch mechanism.
"Once the Amaxines were our enemies,"
said the Drengir leader to those who surrounded him. His followers all rustled in apparent agreement.
"They built this structure to better fight us. Then we found it and used it to fight them. They abandoned the station, left it to us. Our victory!"
The Drengir all shouted with the memory of that glory. Based on what Reef had studied about the Amaxines, any victory against them would have been hard won. All he cared about was that the howling celebration had given him the moment of distraction he needed to elbow Dez through the pod door. Dez stumbled and landed on his hands and knees. Reef winced, but told himself that at least that would be the last of Dez Rydan's suffering. One of the Drengir motioned toward them.
"Let them go to this station. We will follow."
"Follow?"
Reef's voice trailed off. There were two transit pods in the launcher, and he'd worked them around to one while not noticing Drengir already boarding the other. Summoning his courage, he said,
"Fine, follow us. We have friends aboard the station."
They acknowledged him again, but with braying, rustling laughter that sent shivers along Reef's spine.
"This station will be ours, and our conquest of the galaxy can resume."
Reith imagined the thick greenery throughout the Amaxine station. Drengir could have been, must have been in stasis the entire time, hidden in plain sight. The darkness surrounding them hadn't been the shadow of something long dead, but of something that could awaken again. "Gotta go," Reith said. "Thanks for the stimulating conversation." The Drengir's laughter filled his ears until he, too, was in the transport pod. Extinguishing the lightsabers, Reith dropped them, pulled the hatch door shut, and hit the one control on the panel. Immediately, the workings began their strange whine hum.
"Where are we?"
Dez managed to say. He remained on his hands and knees.
"I don't understand where we are."
Reith helped Dez into the one seat, crouching by him to keep him steady. "It doesn't matter, because we're not staying," he said gently. "We're going home, and the Drengir will be right behind us." Haig's blaster fired. As though in slow motion, Comex saw Orla's raised hand and felt her pushing back through the Force. The energy bolt crackled in the air, not frozen in place, but moving forward slowly enough that the Jedi were able to easily step around it. As soon as it was behind them, Orla let it go. It crashed into the wall with a spray of sparks that briefly illuminated Haig's astonished face.
"Why do you attack us?" Comex demanded. "We have done you no harm."
Orla added,
"We helped you." "Yes, you did. But you did that as much for yourselves as for me, didn't you?"
Haig retained some remnant of the avuncular warmth he'd shown when they all first met after the Legacy Run disaster, but the blaster he held told the true story.
"It suited your vanity to be the great and wise, saving the poor and helpless. But the Nihil are poor no longer, and we have never been helpless."
And there it was, Haig's anger no longer masked. In him, it was not a sudden flame of temper, but a deeply banked volcanic heat that roiled on and on. Nor was his anger purely for himself. This was something he bore for his people. Comex wondered who the Nihil were, where they must have come from to carry such wrath as their birthright. He said only,
"None of that answers the question. Why do you attack us?"
"We were the only ones stranded here, but misfortune fell on our entire cloud."
Haig spoke as though they should know what cloud referred to.
"Probably a subset of the Nihil," Comex reasoned.
Meanwhile, Haig continued.
"What should have been a moment of supreme triumph is instead indignity. When we are asked for our troll, we will have almost nothing to offer, and they might cast us out."
A gleam came into his eyes.
"But if we offer them the lives of the Jedi and the secrets of this space station, those will make up for everything. Now that the rest of our cloud is here, we can finally act."
Haig lifted his blaster and fired, not at the Jedi, but at the shield doors behind them. They slid shut with a heavy bang, sealing them in. Comex and Orla exchanged glances that revealed they'd each looked for an exit and found none.
"Your sorcery cannot save you,"
Haig said, but he appeared somewhat shaken.
"We don't need sorcery,"
Orla shot back. She always did let herself be baited a little too quickly.
"We have lightsabers."
Haig no longer wanted to engage with them. Comex could not tell whether the man was intimidated or merely moving on. Haig's head turned as he spoke into a small comlink pinned to the lapel of his jacket.
"Intruders aboard the station are confirmed. Two Jedi, possibly others, as movement in the transport areas of the station has also been detected."
Transport areas?
Comex filed that away for later reference, assuming there was a later. From Haig's comlink came a harsh voice.
Send a team to investigate the transport areas and clear them. Hold the Jedi. Another team will join for the extermination.
Affy didn't want to leave her mission unfinished, but the Jedi were already in trouble. That meant Leox and Geode might be too. While she hadn't been able to identify every strange sound ricocheting through the station in the past few hours, the last loud bangs had definitely been blaster fires striking metal. She wanted her friends to leave the station alive, which meant putting her mission aside for a while. At least they'd rearmed themselves, as Leox had suggested. She put one hand on the lone thermal detonator in her bag, just to reassure herself it was there. It would be better not to fight at all, but if the Nihil had started a fight, Affy wanted to know she could end it. A barely audible thump seemed to be coming from the airlock ring. Affy hesitated. Get to the fight, or head to the airlock where apparently the vessel had just docked. They'd have better odds in a fight if Leox and Geode were with them. The airlock ring it was. Bag scraping along the wall behind her, Affy made her way around the corner into a corridor that opened up into the main arboretum. So far as she could see, nothing had changed. The idols were back more or less where they'd been before, and the ATs were gardening as usual. But some of the greenery down there, trees and logs and such, had it moved? Since when did plants wander? Affy gave herself permission to keep going and ask questions later. She continued down the long spiral walkway into the path that traced the circumference of the airlock ring, where apparently the vessel had not docked. Instead, several dark-clad figures were emerging from what had to be a massive ship. As Affy's eyes adjusted, she could make out the blue streaks painted into their hair and across the ghoulish breath masks they wore. Those masks were all too familiar.
"The Nihil," she whispered.
Their huge warship had docked with the station after all. They were invading the station en masse. What chance did she and her friends have? None. Unless she stopped the war party from boarding. Affy didn't see the Jedi below her. For their sakes, she hoped they weren't too close by. No time to check. She took the thermal detonator from her bag. Its heft felt strange in her hand, unfamiliar and frightening. Affy knew how dangerous a weapon it was. She'd never actually used one before. But she'd brought it to save her friends, and that's what she intended to do. Affy set its timer to 10 seconds and then hurled it straight toward the airlock connected with the Nihil ship. Dropping to the walkway floor, she had just enough time to cover her head before the explosion. Boom! The shockwave hit her, a physical impact that knocked her onto her side. Even though her arms had been over her ears, she was momentarily deafened to anything but a high-pitched static sound. Blinking, Affy stared up at air thick with swirling dust and small scorched pieces of what might have been fabric, armor, or skin. Nausea gripped her. Affy'd had to defend herself and her ship before, but actually killing multiple people? Even if they were Nihil. Then she felt, rather than heard, feet marching up the metal steps of the walkway. Someone had survived the blast, and that someone was coming directly toward her. Me and my big mouth, Orla thought, not for the first time when she realized the Nihil freighter was docking with a station only 50 meters down that arc of the airlock corridor, past the nearest arch. I bragged about our having lightsabers, and what happens? More enemies than the three of us could ever cut down. Probably this was the Force teaching her about humility. Orla hated humility. Her consternation lasted only as long as it took her to turn toward their oncoming attackers, because at that moment, something detonated with a mighty roar. The flash bang of the explosion sent Haig staggering backward, and even the Jedi rocked on their feet. At least some of the Nihil fell, but through the roiling black smoke just beyond the arch,
other warriors continued rushing toward them, ignoring their fallen comrades. Had a Nihil weapon gone off accidentally? Was this ancient station finally starting to break down after all the mayhem of the past several days? Doesn't matter, Orla figured. You caught a break? Use it. She launched herself toward Haig, who had righted himself, but only just. Orla landed almost at his feet as if she were kneeling before him. Maybe he thought she was about to surrender. Instead, she ignited her double-bladed saber, blades parallel, handle still locked, and slashed upward to slice his blaster rifle into three parts. Plasma sparks sprayed around them as Orla snapped her saber handle open so the two blades shone from either end. Haig winced, but his anger was greater than his caution. With the smoldering piece of the blaster rifle still in his hands, he swung down at Orla's head. She managed to dodge, then leapt backward several meters to get a better look at the unfolding conflict. Komak faced the archway, blocking fire with his lightsaber at such speed that Orla could hardly make out the blade. He seemed to be holding a swirling shield of brilliant color. Because of that, the Nihil couldn't advance past the archway to infiltrate the station at large. That wasn't a victory, only a stalemate. Even if Orla joined him, two Jedi could only hold that many armed warriors at bay for so long. She looked around and saw embedded within the various arches of the outer ring what looked like emergency doors, probably put there in case of atmospheric breach. Their structure appeared compromised by both the explosion and time. The centuries-old frame was showing strain and even fine patterns of small holes. They wouldn't keep anything airtight any longer, but that didn't mean the doors couldn't be put to use. She'd need the manual controls, which she spotted near the ceiling. A small service ladder provided a way for Orla to get up there without spending the energy to jump directly. From the looks of things, she needed to reserve her strength. The ladder was close enough to one of the controls for her to reach. Unfortunately, it was also high enough to make her a perfect target for the blasters of the Nihil. Reigniting her saber, she spun its two white blades to create a kind of shield, like a shimmering circle that deflected the blaster fire. To judge by the yelps and curses she heard, the fire was ricocheting straight back at the Nihil. With her free hand, she reached for the controls. They were just past the tips of her fingers, but it took only the slightest tug with the force to pull them free. The walls began to shudder. She cried, "Look out below!" With a mighty crash, the long, dormant emergency doors shot out and slammed shut. They created a 3-meter-tall wall that nearly blocked the entire length and width of the ring. A few holes betrayed time and damage, but they weren't easily breached. The barrier was hardly impregnable since the Nihil could go around the long way, but it would slow them down. Maybe it would also make them think twice before escalating the conflict. Sliding down the ladder got Orla back to the floor before the dust had settled. Komak stood there panting, only just beginning to lower his lightsaber and gave her the shadow of a smile.
"You always were excellent at improvisation."
"It's my specialty."
Orla put one hand on his shoulder.
"Are you all right?"
Komak held up a hand as he coughed.
"Fine. I inhaled a few particulates. Nothing a Colto rinse can't fix."
Next, they needed to come up with a plan to not only keep the Nihil out of the station at large, but also drive them away completely. Or so Orla thought before she heard the scream.
"Who's that?" she said. "Not one of the Nihil."
"It's Affy," Komak said, his face falling. "She's in trouble."
Orla finished for him.
"And I just trapped her on the other side."
The electric blue swirl of hyperspace visible through the transport pod windows might have been comforting if Wreath had known the Drengir were seeing it too.
"At least there's no debris on this path," he told himself.
It wasn't much of a bright side. Dez slumped on his shoulder, weak but conscious, more or less. He murmured,
"Are they gone?"
The Drengir? They're gone for now.
Wreath checked Dez's eyes, saw that they were bloodshot, and his pupils slightly dilated. His condition hadn't improved, but at least it hadn't gotten worse either.
They might catch up to us at the station, but we'll have the others there to help us. Master Komek will be there, remember? Orla Jireni, too. Plus the crew of the vessel. Remember them? Leox and Affy and the rock guy?
With a shake of his head, Dez seemed to wake himself up a little more.
We'll have help.
Right, exactly.
Probably this wasn't a good time to mention that Haig and Nan had turned out to be Nihil. It was definitely not the time to get deeper into Master Jorah's death.
It was possible Dez didn't even remember that she was gone. If so, Wreath envied him.
Anyway, they already had enough to deal with, especially given that the Drengir were absolutely positively going to catch up to them at the station.
Homicidal warrior plants, he thought. Never read a single thing about those. Just one more thing I need to write up for the archives.
With a subtle shimmy, the transport pod slipped out of hyperspace. Pressing his face to the hatch, Wreath caught a glimpse of the station ahead, which they were approaching at high speed. Were the return mechanisms working as well as the launchers had been?
Well, he murmured to himself, we're about to find out.
Once again, a tractor beam took hold of the pod. Wreath exhaled in relief as they slowed. At least they had a chance of landing alive. Then, through the skinny windows of the hatch, he glimpsed something alongside the station's equatorial ring. Was it a ship? If so, it was a whole lot larger than the vessel. But then the angle shifted, the station dropped out of view, and he wasn't certain he'd seen anything at all. Darkness swallowed them as the pod entered the launch tube. In only seconds, it came to a stop. Immediately, Wreath shoved the hatch open.
Come on,
he said, tugging Dez's arm around his shoulders so he could tow him back to safety.
Let's go, one foot in front of the other.
It wasn't clear whether Dez understood any of that, but he stumbled along. They made their way into the tunnels of the lower ring. In the darkness, their labyrinthine twisting had never been more confusing. Wreath had just determined the way out when he heard what he recognized as a transport pod docking. The Drengir had arrived. He did his best to hurry, but that was a mistake. Dez got tangled up in his own steps and tumbled to the floor. Wreath leaned over him, grabbing Dez's robes in his hands.
You've got to get up! You've got to...
Dez stared up at him slackly. He was in no shape to climb up through the treacherous tunnel that led to the main part of the station, even if the ATs didn't attack, and there was no guarantee of that. Although Wreath had the strength and the ability and the force to bring Dez up with him, he wouldn't be able to do so quickly enough to escape the pursuing Drengir. He refused to leave Dez, even though that meant they were trapped